Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. One of the most worrisome aspects of that war at the moment is the emergence in rogue states like North Korea and Iran of increasing capabilities to threaten their neighbors and, in some cases, us, with missiles of longer and longer ranges, more and more capability, and presumably the capacity to deliver here weapons of mass destruction. A man who has devoted much of his career of late to protecting us against this threat is our first guest. He is Ricky Ellison. He is the chairman and founder of the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance. You might know him from a previous incarnation, though. He was a middle linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers and the Oakland Raiders, a winner of 3 Super Bowls, and a distinguished, extraordinary football player at the college level as well. Ricky, you're playing a linebacker for all of us these days, for which we're very grateful. Welcome back. It's good to have you with us, sir.
I appreciate that, Frank.
Let's talk first and foremost about North Korea, Ricky, because it's much in the news of late. It is incessantly experimenting with missiles, including one that it seemed to launch from some sort of undersea platform. How serious a threat does this country represent, do you think, and to all of us, some of us more than others, should we all be concerned at the very least?
I think North Korea is at the all-time greatest threat level to the United States of America in its existence as a nation. We've had 16 tests since the beginning of this year, both in flight tests, in nuclear. They had a nuclear test, and their aggressive behavior and movement on development of the KON-08 missile, which is a solid fuel missile. And that's the missile that has the range, has the capability, can be hidden underwater, can be hidden in the ground, can be hidden mobily. That threatens our ability in quantity numbers to be able to defend against that.
When you look at this rogue regime, this is of course a nation that can't feed its people and yet is clearly putting so much money into the means of threatening ours. Is there any doubt in your mind that the leader, the dictator of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, may be willing actually to carry out some of his oft-stated threats to us?
Well, it's accelerated, and I think a lot of this may have to do with the deal that we got done with Iran. They may be thinking that they should, too, have that same sort of deal, and by creating that type of tension with us, that they can get some sort of better situation than they've got today. They are funded by selling these weapons. They are funded by developing these weapons to other rogue nations, especially Iran. So their income is directly coming from the development of the ballistic missiles and nuclear capability. So that's where he's going, and he, as you know, has been scorned, has had every type of United resolution on it, have sanctions, and he's withstood everybody, withstood China. So, and I think you heard the president last week mention and stated for the first time in his whole 8 years on dealing with him, and the only way to deal with him besides offensively going out and annihilating them is to build up our capabilities to defend against him.
Well, that's what I want to talk with you about next, Ricky Ellison. We're obviously going to be discussing in the coming segment with Claudia Rosette this idea of sanctions, but let's talk with you about your area of expertise as the founder of the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance, which is, what do we do to protect against the kinds of threats that North Korea is fielding? We'll talk in a moment about some of the other even more dangerous adversaries, perhaps, but for the moment, you have numbers of missiles clearly proliferating in North Korea. They're selling them to others as well, as you say. But what kinds of capabilities specifically do you believe are needed on the part of our country to protect, you know, both the continental United States and, for that matter, one of the parts of the country that's closest to North Korea, namely Hawaii?
So we are on a path because our reliability issues of the 30 ground-based interceptors, which President Obama took down from 50 to 30, to get those things more reliable. But that's going to take us till 2020 when we're able to replace the majority of them, which are first-generation interceptors. They're old ones, and they're not as reliable. And we're creating some new type of capability to make them more reliable. So there is a vulnerability, and you can just take 30, and we're going to move up to 44. But you have to assume, and the combatant commanders have assumed, and in Congress testified, that North Korea has capability. We know there's somewhere between 6 and 12 nuclear weapons that they've got. We know they're developing this K-18 missile. They don't have to test it outside. They've tested the engines and so forth. So if you look at the reality here, you could easily have 6 to 12 North Korean missiles that can attack the United States or attack one area, and they would look at the multiple aspects of it. And because our systems are not as reliable as we like them to be, we're going to have to fire 4 at every shot. So that 30 is going to come out pretty quickly. And Hawaii, most of all, is so far from the rest of the 49 states, they only have one-shot opportunity. So they can only take one shot at it because they can't see if they hit it, and they can do another shot to have a second shot to increase the odds of intercept that the rest of the 49 have.
Yeah, they're, in other words, they're far from us, but they're close to the North Koreans, relatively speaking. And Ricky, I know that Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard of Hawaii has been active in the past couple of weeks trying to work this problem in the National Defense Authorization Act. What is she trying to do specifically, and how important do you think that is?
Well, it's extremely important because there is capability on Hawaii today that is not operational. It's in the test mode, and it's the exact capability that's going to go operational next month in Romania, defending millions and millions of people from Iran in Greece and Romania and so forth down there. Yet we have that same capability sitting right in Hawaii.
And why is it not operational for the protection of the people of Hawaii?
Because it's a test asset right now. And I don't know why. I seriously don't know why. It would be a second and third layer. The GBIs would still fly out in front. But just in case you had a miss, you could have another capability right there for it. I know there's some issues with Russia because we promised the Russians that this system couldn't shoot down an ICBM, and maybe that's an issue there. I think there's also an issue with the big Navy that they may not want to do U.S. Homeland Defense mission, because if you can prove out this is a Navy program, you can probably park a ship and a capability in front of every U.S. city and have some sort of capability.
Something I've been championing for a long time, as I think of you, Ricky Ellison. Let me just quickly switch gears. The threat that is particularly worrying to me, besides the one we've been discussing here, the relatively primitive but nonetheless growing North Korean threat, is something called hypersonic delivery systems and maneuvering warheads. Ricky Ellison, the claim by those notably in Russia and China that are bringing these things to fruition very quickly, it seems, is that they will be able to defeat any missile defense. Will we have a missile defense capable of contending with these threats, do you think? And if not, what's the urgency of trying to get one?
So a hypersonic threat does not do a ballistic trajectory. So a hypersonic will go straight up, and then it'll go in all sorts of different maneuvers. So you can't mathematically pick out where that object is coming like you do on a ballistic path. So that causes issues. And the only way you're going to be able to defeat that, really, is either on that boost phase up, or if you know where it's going to end up eventually, you can do terminal defense at that aspect of it. Now, that goes back to boost phase defense, which would require us, and I think we're moving in the research, but very light, and we need to get on top of it. President Obama, 28% decrease in our R&D on missile defense. we need to have a solid-state laser capability on a flying, on a UAV and high altitude like a Global Hawk that can take these things out on launch as they go up in boost phase.
Ricky, this is a subject we're going to have to come back to again very soon because it's of such importance, particularly in the face of these emerging threats. I appreciate so much the work you do at the Missile Defense Advocacy Alliance. I hope you'll keep it up as well as come back to us again very soon. Next up, we'll speak with Claudia Rosette. We'll get her take on sanctions on North Korea and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
If you listen to this radio station a lot, you may have noticed our brand new name. It's got a catchy ring to it. But there's more than that. The name actually tells you who we are and what we do in one word. It took us a while to come up with this, but we realized if there's one thing we want to be to DC listeners, it was this. We want to be your answer to everything, to what happened while you slept, to why am I stuck in traffic, to how do you get control of this country again. Big stuff and little stuff. This may be a tall order for one radio station, but we know we're up for it. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, I'm Tim McGraw. The men and women of the Air Force Reserve play a vital role in protecting us at home and abroad. They are your neighbors, whose dedication to our country and commitment to their communities call them to serve. Dedication, commitment, and service. It happens every day at home and around the world. They're your neighbors, making a difference.
Joel Klein catches a 7 o'clock train after his evening CPR class at the American Red Cross.
Ron Garrity's on the same train. He's had a rough day and doesn't feel like himself. Until he feels the sudden tightness in his chest, Ron never thought he'd actually have a heart attack.
Until Joel is administering CPR, he never thought he'd actually save a life.
When you train with the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined by Claudia Rosette, one of our time's most accomplished and, I think, extraordinary investigative reporters. She is the longtime editorial writer for The Wall Street Journal, now a columnist for Forbes.com, and also PJ Media, where you can find her Rosette Report. Claudia, it's always a delight to have you with us, but thank you very much for taking time today.
Thanks. Great to be here, Frank.
I'm particularly pleased that we're talking because you've had a couple of really important pieces in the past week or two, and I wanted to cover as much as we could several of them. One in the Wall Street Journal about North Korea. We're talking a lot about that today. The kinds of threats that it represents, the kinds of threats that it obviously seeks to constitute towards us, but also the failure of sanctions to dissuade Kim Jong-un from doing so. Give us sort of a lay of the land, if you would.
Sure. Well, the problem one is that there actually is no record of sanctions stopping a nuclear program. The Iran nuclear deal, if anything, suggests that they lead to negotiations that lead to the guarantee that a country can get to the bomb. And in fact, North Korea, which went through sanctions, negotiations over and over again, has now, in January, conducted its fourth nuclear test and is now visibly preparing for a fifth. What has been done? The UN Security Council, led by the U.S. In this instance, on March 2nd, passed what the what the Obama administration has been advertising as the toughest sanctions in decades on North Korea. Ambassador Samantha Power said this resolution is so comprehensive that there are provisions that leave no gap, no window. Well, Frank, that's just not true.
Not the first time she's prevaricated old Samantha Power, but perhaps this is particularly insidious because we've been down this road before, Claudia. Nobody knows better than you. You cover so well the United Nations particularly. And this bait and switch, I saw the New York Times today editorializing that we've got to get back into negotiations with the North Koreans, even though these have materially failed time and time again. Claudia Rosette is our guest. We're talking about North Korea and the idea that sanctions can do anything really other than produce negotiations that affirm what even the New York Times says, in this case, may now be some 20 nuclear weapons worth of materials and perhaps bombs in North Korea. Claudia, this pattern of failure is giving rise clearly to a threat. Is there any reason to believe that there are sanctions as yet unimposed that might make a difference on the North Korean regime?
You know, Frank, it's unlikely that even if they imposed really truly sweeping sanctions, that it would stick. For one thing, China is an enormous transshipment hub. But if you look at the way, and that's very likely to continue, but if you look at some of the specifics of what they've done now, you'll see what has been over and over a pattern here. It sounds, and I took a look at the sanctions on North Korea's merchant shipping fleet, which has been involved over decades in arms smuggling, and, you know, it is one of the prime conveyances for North Korea's weapons program, both bringing things in and taking things out. And there you see that the UN imposed what sounds like, you know, an impressive set of sanctions, this whole list of North Korean ships that are under sanctions. Sounds good. Except when you really look at the big picture, you see that far less than half the relevant fleet has been sanctioned. And you see the things have been omitted, which to me suggests sort of glaring political games at the very least, either that or our own authorities are missing things that they just shouldn't be missing.
Including three ships that you've identified, Claudia Rosette, that are plying the waters of the Persian Gulf, presumably doing exactly the kinds of transfers or of arming, if you will, of Iran that you've been warning about. This really seems like malfeasance on the part of our officials.
We have what you see are, for instance, as you just said, three freighters flagged to North Korea, which ought to get our attention, which have not been put on any sanctions list. These have been shuttling to and from Iran for roughly the past year, between Dubai and Iran, Kuwait and Iran. And you need to ask, what are they carrying? why is it interesting for... Now, one thing that having a North Korean flag means is that we need the permission of North Korea to interdict them at sea. You can hope that these are being inspected, as the UN now demands, in the ports in Kuwait and Dubai. But what this also means is that the member state does its own inspection. So Iran would be doing any inspecting in Iranian ports. That's not actually reassuring.
But Claudia, let me just switch gears, if I may, because there are two other pieces that you've written that I really want to make sure we applaud as well in your PJ Media Rosette report. One has to do with the climate deal. And I know that, again, because you have been very assiduous in your reportage about the United Nations, this particular travesty is not a surprise, I guess, to you. But give us a flavor of the folly of what was done on Earth Day by John Kerry, among others.
Yeah, this big agreement was signed at the United Nations, or the signatories, countries arrived to deposit their signatures to this big climate treaty that was reached in Paris last December. And the Obama administration has been touting it as a great success, that 175 members, actually, they include in that the Palestinian Authority, so that's another ball of wax, but that this enormous number of countries have signed up. And, Frank, it's not always a good sign when everybody at the UN agrees on things. In this case, what they're all signing up for is this huge giveaway by developed countries, principally the United States, which empowers...
The so-called Green Climate Fund, right?
Yeah. Effectively, it's a route for riches and power for our, what you might call the American eco-elite, the people who, you know, run things like Solyndra and or agencies that tell us what we may or may not do. It's going to be a terrible, huge cost for the average American. So, of course, all these other countries are saying, yes, give me something. Well, we want, there are funds being offered and all sorts of programs and projects. And this is a treaty that's going, actually, the administration is not treating it as a treaty. It's not planning to submit it to the Senate.
Yeah, but just explain that to me, Claudia. At the United Nations, it's a treaty. In Washington, D.C., it's not a treaty.
It's the logic of Obamacare. You know, it's a tax except when it isn't. In this case, the U.N. is treating it as a treaty. The Obama administration is treating it as just the sort of agreement that follows on a treaty that the U.S. entered into way back in 1992, saying, well, it's all just an extension. So simultaneously, you have the Obama administration celebrating this as this huge landmark thing. John Kerry went to sign this deal with his granddaughter on his lap at the UN. And at the same time, they're saying it doesn't need to be submitted for ratification by the Senate because it isn't a treaty. What it is, Frank, is an enormous blueprint for central planning in which the pretense is that this is going to fine-tune the temperature of the climate of the planet in the second half of the century, when there's no more accountability by anyone who's now signing this thing, to within a few decimal points. It's just, it's voodoo stuff, except that it's very, very expensive.
Yeah, it's a vehicle for a transfer of wealth, Claudia Rosette. And you know better than anybody that this has been a longstanding agenda of the United Nations and the transnational progressives and, of course, not least the Obama administration. So we shouldn't be surprised, but we should be horrified just the same. Claudia, we wanted to talk to you about the so-called receding tide of war, another example of Obama, well, I call it national security fraud, but that will be for another day. We look forward to that conversation with you again very soon. In the meantime, your work at places like the Wall Street Journal, but also Forbes.com and PJ Media are extraordinarily appreciated. Keep them up and come back to us again, if you would, very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Gordon Chang. We'll talk with him a little bit more about North Korea, China, and you. Straight ahead.
Visit us at Facebook.com/Secure Freedom with Frank Gaffney.
People from around the country have no clue what we're like here in Washington, D.C. Yeah, we've got our whack jobs like the guy who climbed the fence and walked around the White House. We have the people who see the black helicopters. But there's one common denominator for all of us, friends and family. And there's no place where relationship means more than it does right here. Yeah, we may be famous for the dignitaries, but friends and family that makes us tick. And frankly, this radio station gets that. That's why I listen. AM 1260, The Answer.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Obama legacy has a new, deeply problematic manifestation. It's the predictable and predicted fruit of his decision to abandon Iraq by essentially withdrawing all U.S. military personnel against the strong advice of their leaders and most members of Congress. The principal beneficiary of this reckless act was Iran, the rabidly anti-American nation he has gone on to further empower, enrich, and embolden ever since. Yesterday, one of Iran's proxies, Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, flexed his patron's muscles in the heart of official Baghdad. He sent thousands of his fighters over the walls of the Green Zone, sacking the parliament and demanding a new government there. The upshot of all this will likely be an Iraq that is even less stable, even less of a bulwark against Iranian aggression, and even more of a problem for this country. Some legacy, Mr. President. This is Frank Gaffney.
This is Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. According to the New York Times, President Obama said during a rare visit to the CIA to discuss the second phase in the battle against ISIS on April 13th, that the U.S.-led coalition had momentum against ISIS and that ISIS fighters realize their cause is lost. But the previous day, the New York Times ran a story with the headline, ISIS expands reach despite military and financial setbacks, noting that although ISIS has suffered losses on the ground in Iraq and Syria, it has expanded its presence in northern Africa, Afghanistan, and Europe. There also has been little progress in stopping ISIS's efforts to recruit homegrown terrorists worldwide. The president is in denial about the threat from ISIS. His trip to the CIA, which should have occurred 5 years ago when the violence broke out in the Middle East, was little more than a publicity stunt. I'm Fred Fleitz. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back for what is one of the high points of my week, and I hope of yours as well, our visit with one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving Asia, Gordon Chang. You find his writings at The Daily Beast, Forbes.com, WorldAffairsJournal.com, and of course, you see his handsome visage at Forbes and other television outlets as well. It's always a pleasure to catch up with him in some distant part of the world. Vancouver, I believe, is the location today. Gordon Chang, welcome back. Good to have you as always.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Gordon, we've been talking in the course of the show with Ricky Ellison and Claudia Rosette about missile threats emanating from the countries that you cover so well. Of course, North Korea. The subject of your book, Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and increasingly from Communist China as well, specifically in the latter case with these hypersonic missile delivery systems. Give us a flavor, Gordon, as to how these potential adversaries of the United States view the kinds of asymmetric capabilities these represent against things like our carriers or for that matter, our homeland.
Yeah, North Korea has been quickly developing its missiles. These, can do enormous damage. Just one missile, for instance, with a nuclear warhead. You've talked about the EMP threat to the United States. Well, the North Koreans are thinking about these things, and clearly the Chinese as well. They had another successful test of their hypersonic missile, which is possibly an intent, a first strike weapon. And as well as we've talked about many times, the Chinese have very cheap cruise missiles that can put holes in American carriers. Clearly, they are trying to prevent the United States from ever going into the South China Sea. And that was confirmed by a leading Chinese academic, Xi Yinhong of Renmin University, who said that it is Beijing's ultimate goal to keep the U.S. out of that critical body of water. This, of course, contradicts all of the benign statements we hear out of Beijing. It's very important that we understand the broad-based nature of the challenge, not just from China, but also from its only formal military ally, North Korea.
As we've been discussing, Gordon, the state of our military presence in the region is not what we would like it to be. I think that's an understatement, really. We had an incident recently involving not simply harassing American ships or air crews, but denying a port in Hong Kong to the Stennis carrier battle group. Give us a flavor of what the Chinese are calculating in doing that and whether there are some alternatives that we might be pursuing in its stead.
The American consulate in Hong Kong confirmed that Beijing denied a port call for the Stennis, which had recently been in the South China Sea. Our Defense Secretary Ashton Carter was on the Stennis, and clearly they in China they didn't like the symbolism. You know, they have denied port calls every once in a while to the United States when they're upset about one thing or another. And for us, you know, we keep on trying to shovel money into the People's Republic. We should stop doing this. We should have port calls with our friends. And, you know, one friend that we don't have port calls with, of course, is Taiwan. That's that free democratic state that China wants to absorb. I think this, you know, the Chinese are good at symbolism. We should be as well. A port call in Taipei or Kaohsiung would do wonders, I think, for American diplomacy and would teach the Chinese, among other things, that we're no longer afraid of them.
Gordon Chang, one of the other things that you have, of course, been keeping us abreast of, and I think that Ash Carter was talking about and probably inflaming the Chinese over, was what they're doing in the South China Sea. And you've talked with us about particularly Scarborough Shoal as the newest potential flashpoint. Have there been any further developments on that score? You warned that they looked as though they were getting ready to begin land reclamation there for the purposes, presumably, of building more fortified islands from which to project power. Anything updated?
Yeah, in the last week or so, there really has been a very little in the way of public developments. Everyone is reporting about intense diplomacy behind the scenes, the United States trying to do everything possible below the surface to keep the Chinese from starting to reclaim Scarborough Shoal. This is very much keyed to the UN arbitration decision expected either late this month or next month on the Philippines suit, which basically challenges China's nine-dash line claims to about 85% of the South China Sea. This is going to happen very soon, Frank. The United States recently basically canceled a third FONOP, this operation to assert our rights to international water and airspace. That was not a good thing, but I suspect that it was part of this quiet diplomacy to try to get the Chinese not to start reclaiming Scarborough. Scarborough could be the critical turning point of the 21st century, as we've talked about, because we cannot allow the Chinese to make permanent a seizure of a feature. If we do that, this is going to be akin to letting the Third Reich take Sudetenland. It's that important.
Gordon, it comes again as the backdrop of political turmoil and economic difficulties inside China may add to some of the tendencies that you're describing in terms of aggressiveness towards us and towards their region. Two things that you've been writing about recently, one in Forbes and the other in World Affairs Journal, are on the political side a rivalry that seems to be afoot between Xi Jinping, the president of China, and his premier. Talk a little bit about Xi versus Li and also about the three bubbles that you see afflicting the Chinese economy.
Xi Jinping is the ruler of China. Li Keqiang is the premier and therefore supposed to be the economic czar. Xi Jinping has taken a lot of decision-making away from Li Keqiang, but Li seems to be making a revival recently, largely because there's unhappiness with Xi Jinping's management of the economy. In this last week, there were rumors of an assassination attempt on Li Keqiang when he was in Sichuan province. I think they're probably false, but nonetheless, it shows the intensity of the struggle among the two leaders. And right now, China is going through a number of bubbles. They call them the triple bubble. It's basically an investment bubble, a real estate bubble, and a credit bubble. And it is not doing China any good. Basically, it's sort of reflated the economy for a month, but everyone is really concerned because it's adding to debt. And therefore, people are very concerned about the way Xi Jinping is managing the Chinese economy into the ground.
You talk about, among other things, the creation of obligations at an extraordinary rate. I don't know that we're in any position to throw stones in this regard, given the burgeoning of our national debt. But with respect to China and its economic conditions and the kind of political turmoil that you've described, Gordon, what is the fact that there seems to be now a rate of debt to the creation of GDP on the order of four times as much of the debt as there is of creation of wealth? What do you anticipate that means for China and perhaps for the rest of us?
Yeah, there's got to be a credit crisis because, as you point out, China is creating four times the amount of debt than nominal GDP. It could even be more than that, depending on your view of how fast they're growing. This is
and how much they're cooking the books, too, right?
Well, they definitely are cooking the books. The numbers for the first calendar quarter of this year are inconsistent. Actually, the National Bureau of Statistics issued inconsistent numbers about its first quarter growth. This has economists and analysts just sort of laughing in derision as what the Chinese are doing. But they are creating this credit bubble that you mentioned. The amount of credit that was created in the first calendar quarter of this year was more than twice that of the preceding quarter. It exceeded all expectations of analysts. This is serious, and clearly the Chinese government is now worried about it because they're now putting out propaganda missives about all of this, which shows that they know that they're in trouble. Xinhua News Agency just came out with the most recent one saying, no, we're not trying to overstimulate the economy. Well, yes, they are.
Nobody tracks it better than you. Gordon Chang, thank you for your time with us each week, and I wish you safe travels as well as a speedy return to our microphones. In the meantime, stay well, my friend. Next up, Ambassador Frances Rooney joins us. We'll talk about whether we understand we're at war and with whom. Refugees, Cuba, the Pope, and more. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Every year, more American adults die from vaccine-preventable diseases than from breast cancer, traffic accidents, or AIDS. Vaccines like the one for pneumococcal disease can protect adults from illnesses that can cause missed days of work, hospitalization, and even death. Pneumococcal disease is an infection that can lead to pneumonia, meningitis, or even a severe blood infection. That's just one example of an infection that can spread from person to person. Getting vaccinated can help protect you and those close to you. I'm Dr. Susan Rehm of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. When I speak with my patients, I urge them to get all their recommended vaccines. Now I'm urging you to speak with your doctor to find out which vaccines you need. For more information about the vaccines that are recommended for adults and the diseases they prevent, like HPV, whooping cough, tetanus, and shingles, visit adultvaccination.org. That's www.adultvaccination.org.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
I lost my healthy 27-year-old son to influenza. Jacob wasn't someone you'd expect to die from the flu. He was strong, a martial arts athlete. After 5 weeks of fighting, Jacob died.
I'm Dr. Bill Schaffner of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. Each year, influenza claims the lives of Americans of all ages, including healthy young adults like Jacob. Ask about vaccination the next time you're at your doctor's office or pharmacy. Visit adultvaccination.org.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. It is a great pleasure to welcome to these microphones once again a man who, as it happens, is a classmate of mine at Georgiopolitan Collegium, better known these days as Georgetown University. He is Ambassador Francis Rooney. He went on to much better things than most of us, including serving as the United States Ambassador to the Holy See from 2005 to 2008. an experience that informed his terrific book, The Global Vatican, an inside look at the Catholic Church, world politics, and the extraordinary relationship between the United States and the Holy See. These days, he is chief executive of his company, Rooney Holdings Incorporated, and serves on a number of other boards and various capacities that contribute mightily to the common good. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back. It's always good to have you with us.
Frank, thank you for having me back on.
Well, as you've mentioned to me off air, this is the fifth anniversary of the death of Osama bin Laden, a day that I hope is being celebrated throughout the free world, but probably unremarked by most of us. It comes at a moment when you have encouraged us to reflect on whether this is, as you put it in a recent article, war yet. Well, is it? Are we, in fact, at war? And if so, do we understand who it is with?
Well, I think it's a war. Certainly the so-called caliphate has made it clear they've declared war on us and everything the Western world stands for. So I don't see why we don't dignify them with a similar response and try to get the American people looking at this as a more broadly organized hostility rather than a terrorist, than responding to terrorism.
In isolated acts thereof at that. You know, one of the places in which, of course, this caliphate, for want of a better term, or aspirants to it, are on the march is against Christians in the Middle East. John Kerry, in his fashion, acknowledged that this amounts to genocide these days. Shouldn't that be regarded by us, Mr. Ambassador, as proof positive of what they have in mind for the rest of us as well?
Well, the last couple of genocides, we sure considered it war. Pol Pot in Cambodia and certainly Hitler and the Japanese. So I don't see why not. I'm glad Secretary Kerry finally spoke up a little bit because the great Satan in the White House hasn't said a word about persecuted Christians or genocide at all.
I'm sorry, did you call the President of the United States the great Satan in the White House? Well, that will make some news. Mr. Ambassador, whatever one thinks of the President of the United States, we have for sure been turning a blind eye to this kind of horror at the hands of jihadists. It seems as though the church has as well, and I mean by that not just the Catholic Church, but sort of the Christian church, the broadest sense. You served in the Vatican, of course, as a representative for a number of years. Is that an unfair indictment of what Pope Francis is doing, or would you say that's about right?
Well, the Pope's spoken up a great deal about it, and I know there's been a very strong effort to try to shore up the Catholic University in Jordan, keeping that last flame of, you know, Catholic education alive in the Middle East. But this Pope does so many things that I'm afraid his message about radical Islam and his message about the genocide and the persecution of Christians kind of gets lost in all the other messages about social justice and poverty and climate change and everything else. I mean, Pope Benedict was much more laser-like and narrow in his diplomatic focus, and I think he was much more clearly understood as a result of it.
Well, it seemed he much more clearly understood the nature of this jihadism and Sharia, this doctrine that impels it as well. He seemed to have been badly beaten up for doing so, and perhaps that's contributing to the incumbent Pope's willingness to sort of look the other way, at least as to the impetus behind what is afoot now for Christians and others. Let me ask you, you've written about the need, Ambassador Rooney, for a safe haven in Syria to provide a refuge for people who are now being persecuted or simply murdered for other reasons. Muslims as well as Christians, for that matter. One of the things that the president has been pushing, as you know, among others, has been for their resettlement in some numbers here. We're watching what's happening in that regard in Europe, and I wonder what your thoughts are as to the advisability of bringing particularly people who cannot be vetted into this country. Something that I have to say the Catholic Charities, among others, are very anxious to do.
Yeah, I think that the Catholic Charities and the Bishops' Conference are a little off base here and ought to be looking at this more of the security threat that certainly a lot of people think it is. And yeah, I don't really trust the government to adequately vet people. Look at the post office. And this is a serious issue, and there have been so many dots connectable from people leaving Iraq and Syria and Lebanon with Hezbollah and getting through Europe and getting to the United States and doing things like supporting the San Bernardino people, and actually one of the San Bernardino people being an overstayed visa, that I think we should take it very seriously who's in our country. We should take a hard look at our visa plans that are based on too much honesty for perhaps for today's world, and crack down.
You know, one of the things that I think is working at cross purposes with that, of course, is the extraordinary amount of money. I've been told it's upwards of 90% of the Catholic Charities budget is covered by the money that they're making bringing these so-called refugees in. And again, this just raises a question as to whether self-interest perhaps is trumping national interest, and I think you're absolutely right to be pointing that out.
Well, you know, if you had the no-fly zone that Secretary Clinton and Jeb Bush both called for, you might have a way to keep those people over there where there's time to vet them and maybe even time to have them stay there and not have to leave in the first place.
Well, it certainly is the case that there's a lot more we can do for a lot less if they stay there and then hopefully are in a position to be, returned to their homes in due course. Mr. Ambassador, and again, we're speaking with Francis Rooney, longtime ambassador to the Vatican and the author of The Global Vatican. Let me ask you about one other subject you've turned your attention to with former governor and Senator Mel Martinez, namely, what's happening in Cuba? Again, here's another instance where the Pope Francis has been a catalyst for change, but not perhaps for the good. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a complex situation with several different shades to it. I've always been a little more pro dialogue and opening relations with Cuba as much as anything from a security point of view. So we have opportunity to have assets on the ground that can accomplish some things that would be helpful to our understanding of who's in power and who's doing what. But with all that said, I'm not at all for the idea of granting financial relationships and support to a regime that still continues to perpetrate injustice, deny freedom, harass protesters, and deny people the access to the internet and things that we need to show them that our way is better.
Yeah. And Mr. Ambassador, is there any question in your mind that that's basically what we're doing? I think you actually use the term propping up the Cuban government with investment, picking up, in effect, where the Soviet Union and subsequently Venezuela left off when essentially they went bankrupt.
Well, that's the thing. We've got them on their back, and we could cut a very good deal because they don't have anywhere else to go for the reasons you just stated. And so as long as the army and the army's corporations are raking off pay of foreign companies, and then they pay the workers directly, and as long as the army is going to be a partner in every foreign business, I think we are propping the regime up. I mean, Starwood is talking about putting a hotel in Cuba, and they're talking about this army corporation being their partner.
And as you've pointed out in your article with Senator Martinez, the fact that these payments, whatever they're going to be paying for their employees, are going to go to the government and not to the people. Mr. Ambassador, we have to leave it at that for the moment, but there's so much more to talk about. I hope you'll give us a chance to do so again very soon. In the meantime, stay well, and again, congratulations on The Global Vatican, an inside look at the Catholic Church, world politics, and the extraordinary relationship between the United States and the Holy See. I hope we'll be seeing the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.